I'll tell you, Menno, I don't disagree that virtue, if it's knowledge, can be taught. I'll ask you, though, if I am justified in doubting that it's knowledge after all. Consider, as to anything at all, not only virtue, if it can be taught, should it not be the case that ones exist who teach it? Shouldn't they have students, too, who learn it? Yes, that seems to be the case. But if, in fact, the teachers don't exist, nor do the students, shouldn't we assume the subject is not one that can be taught? I think that's right. But then do you believe that no one teaches virtue? I have tried repeatedly to find someone who does. My efforts in this area have failed, although I've had the help of many people, including those with most experience, as I believed, in just this kind of teaching. Now, Menno, look who's joined us. Anytus is sitting here. Let's tell him of our search. To do this seems advisable, for first, his father is Anthemion, a man possessed of wealth and wisdom. He did not inherit wealth, nor was he given it, as Ismenias was, the Theban who obtained the fortune of Polycrates. Instead, it came about through his hard work and judgment, nor did he have arrogance or give offence in any other way. Instead, he was well-mannered and polite. And second, he bestowed on Anytus, our friend who's sitting here, an upbringing and education of high quality, as most Athenians believe, for they elect him to their highest offices. It seems that we, in seeking out the teachers of virtue, should enlist the help of men like him, to find if any men exist like this, and if they do, then who they are. So, Anytus, please join with me and join your guest friend Menno here to help us learn who teaches virtue. Look at it like this. Suppose we wanted Menno to become a skilled physician. Who would be the ones to whom we'd send him? Would we not seek out physicians? Would we not send him to them?
We would, indeed.
And if we wanted him to be a shoemaker, would we not send him to shoemakers?
We would.
And so it seems, with other occupations he could have?
That's right.
As to this topic, let's restate. We claim that if he wants to be a doctor, we'll send him to the doctors. What we mean is we should seek someone who knows the craft and practices it, rather than someone who doesn't practice it. Also, the ones we seek should be professionals. They should be ones who charge a fee for what they do. They should, moreover, show that they are teachers by training those who come to them to learn. Are these the qualities that we should seek in choosing where to send him?
Yes, they are.
And what of playing flutes and other crafts? Suppose one wanted to develop skill in playing on the flute. Would it make sense to shun the ones who say they teach the craft and teach it and make money teaching it, and go instead to those who do not claim that they are teachers, ones who do not have a single student in the very subject of which he wants to learn? Do you not think this course of action is a foolish one?
I think it is, by Zeus, and ignorant.
That's right. Now let us speak of Menno here. For some time, Anytus, he said he wants to learn about the wisdom and the virtue by which men soundly manage their affairs, their households and their cities, and bestow their care upon their parents, that they use to welcome and dismiss both citizens and strangers in the way a good man should. To whom should he be sent to learn this virtue? Or is it obvious from what we said that we should seek the ones who say they teach this subject and have been available to any Greek who wants to study it and charge a fee for just this kind of teaching?
Who do you say these men are, Socrates?
I think you know the answer. They're the ones that men call sophists.
Hush now, Socrates. By Heracles, may no one of my household or friends, a stranger or a citizen, be addled in the head sufficiently to go to one like that, receiving harm, for they deliver ruin and corruption to those who follow them.
What do you mean? Are these men, Anytus, so different from others who teach knowledge for a fee? Do they not only fail to benefit what is their trust, but also ruin it, expecting to make money in the process? I find this is not easy to believe, for one of whom I know, Protagoras, earned more from what he taught than Phidias, a sculptor of some note, and more than did 10 other sculptors. Surely what you say must cause surprise, for those who mend old shoes and clothes would be discovered in a month if shoes and clothes they took from customers were worse upon return than when received. Such men would not be able to survive. But all of Greece has not, for 40 years, detected that Protagoras did harm to those who went to him, so that they left in worse condition than when they arrived. I think that he was nearly 70 upon his passing, and had plied his craft for 40 years. For all that time to now, he has enjoyed the highest reputation. Not just Protagoras, but others too, some older than he was, and some who are alive today. Do you maintain that they deceive and harm the young with bad intent, or do you think that they are ignorant? Are we to think these men, whom some would count among the wisest, are in truth just mad?
I do not, Socrates, accuse these men of being mad. Instead, young men who pay their fees are mad, and more so relatives who send their young to them, and most of all, the cities who admit them and who fail to banish any citizen or stranger who operates this way.
Have you been wronged by one of them? Is this why, Anytus, you're hard upon the sophists?
No, by Zeus. I've never met one of them. I won't allow my people to go near them either.
So you have no experience of them?
That's right, and may I stay that way.
So how, good sir, can you know if there's any good in what they teach or not, if you have no experience of it?
That is not hard. I know well what they are. I do not need experience with them to know of it.
Perhaps you are a wizard, Anytus. If not, I wonder how, from what you say. You know these things. However, let's not try to learn of who would injure Menno here if he were sent into their company. Let's say that it's the sophists, if you like. But let me know and aid your family friend by telling him the one he should consult in order to acquire what he seeks, the virtue I described to you just now.
Why not tell him yourself?
I mentioned those I thought could teach him virtue, but you say that I am wrong, and maybe you are right. You tell him whom in Athens he should seek. Provide to him whatever name you want.
Why give him just one name when any man in Athens, if he's willing to assist, will teach him better than the sophists would?
And how is it that they are virtuous? Have they acquired virtue without learning from anyone? And can they teach this virtue that they have never learned?
I think that they have learned from gentlemen who came before them. Or do you think this city lacks good men?
What I think, Anytus, is many men in Athens are adept at politics, as many have been in the past as well. But are they good at teaching their own virtue? That is the point we have before us now, not whether men in Athens may be good, or whether they might have been in the past. Instead, we've been discussing for some time the question whether virtue can be taught. And in the course of our investigation, we are asking whether good men of today and of the past are able to impart the virtue that they have to other men, or whether virtue cannot be transferred from one man to another. It is this that Menno and that I have been discussing for some time now. Consider it this way, according to the statements that you made. Would you agree with me Themistocles was good?
Indeed, he was among the best of men.
It follows he taught virtue well if anyone could teach it.
I agree that he could teach it if he wanted to.
And do you think he wouldn't want to teach it to other men, especially his son? Do you think he withheld from his own son the virtue that he had? Have you not heard the way Themistocles taught Cleophontus, his son, the skill of expert horsemanship? That man could mount a horse and, standing upright, could hurl a javelin from that position. Not only this, but he had other skills of note because of teaching that he had and that his father gave him. All these skills require that he learn from expert teachers. Have you not heard of this from older men?
I have.
So it's not possible to claim that lack of natural talent caused the son to fail in virtue?
No, perhaps it isn't.
And yet, has anyone who's young or old, that you are aware of, ever tried to claim Cleophontus was just as good and wise as was Themistocles' father?
Never.
Should we believe Themistocles set out to teach his son in all those other skills, but not to teach him in the skill he had himself, the skill of virtue? If indeed such virtue can be taught, does it seem likely?
Perhaps it doesn't seem that way, by Zeus.
And yet, as you yourself agree, he was among the ones we should consider great in teaching virtue. Here's another man, Aristides, the son of Lysimachus. Do you agree with me this man was good?
Of course I do.
He gave to his own son, called Lysimachus too, an education in teaching, and his training was the best that Athens has to offer. Do you think he was, as a result, a better man than any other? for you've dealt with him and seen the kind of man that he became. Consider also Pericles, a man of splendid wisdom. He has raised two sons, called Paralus and Xanthippus.
Yes, I know.
You know as well he taught them horsemanship. They rode as well as any men in Athens. He had them educated in the arts and in gymnastics and in all the skills required to compete with other men. But did he also want them to be good? I think he did want that, but no one could teach goodness. And so that you don't suppose that just a few Athenians have failed in virtue, and they are inferior. Remember that Thucydides brought up two sons, Melesius and Stephanus, and that he had them educated well in everything but virtue. In the sport of wrestling, they became the best in Athens. One son was taught by Xanthias, and one learned from Eudorus, and these two instructors were held to be the greatest of their day in wrestling. Do you not remember this?
I do remember hearing that.
It's clear that having paid these men to teach his boys, he would not fail to teach them what cost nothing, to teach them goodness, if it could be taught. Or was Thucydides inferior, a man who could not boast of many friends in Athens and its allies? No, I think his house was great, his influence was great, in Athens and among the other Greeks. If virtue could be taught, he would have found the man who could have taught it to his sons, a citizen or stranger, if himself he lacked the time because he was concerned with politics. But, Anytus, my friend, it seems more likely virtue can't be taught.
I think that you too easily speak ill of others, Socrates. Here's my advice. If you're inclined to listen, just be careful. In Athens, and perhaps in other cities, it's easier to cause an injury to others than to give a benefit. I think you also know this.
I think, Menno, that Anytus is angry. I am not surprised. He thinks I'm slandering those men, and he thinks he is one of them. One day, he may perceive what slander is, and then he won't be angry any more. For now, he doesn't understand it. Tell me, please, among your people, are there worthy men?
There are.
And do they say they'll guide the young? Do they proclaim, yes, virtue can be taught, and we can teach it?
No, they don't, by Zeus. But sometimes they do say it can be taught, while other times they say the opposite.
And should we say they're teachers of this subject when they themselves cannot agree they are?
I do not think so, Socrates.
And do you think the sophists, who alone profess to teach it, do teach virtue as they claim?
This is, in Gorgias, what I admire above all, Socrates. You'll never hear him promise this. Instead, he ridicules the other sophists when he hears them claim they're teaching virtue. He thinks one should train his students to be clever orators.
So then you think the sophists don't teach virtue?
I don't know, Socrates. Like many men, sometimes I think they do, and sometimes not.
It's not just you and other public men who sometimes think that virtue can be taught, and other times believe the opposite. Theognis says this too in poetry.
Where does he say it?
In his elegiacs. These men should be your fellows, eat and drink with them, and strive to please the powerful. For it is from the good you'll learn of goodness. If you instead seek out the company of bad men, you will lose what wit you have. You see, he hints that virtue can be taught.
I do.
Elsewhere, he has a different view. If one could do a thing like this, he says, instilling wisdom in the minds of men, the ones who did this, who would receive large fees. He also says this, no good father would bring up a son who's bad, because the son would heed the father's wisdom. But in fact, no bad man can be made into a good one by teaching. You can see he contradicts himself when writing on this subject.
Yes, it seems that he is doing that.
Is there another subject you can cite for which the ones who claim to teach it are not held as teachers? And not only that, but they are held not to have knowledge of it. They are thought not competent on just the subject they claim to teach. And is there any subject but this, in which the ones who know the most about it sometimes say it can be taught, and other times do not? Would you agree that people so confused about a subject can teach it well at all?
No, I would not, by Zeus.
Who then is left to do the teaching? If neither sophists nor upstanding men can teach it, there is no one else.
That's right. I think there isn't.
If there are no teachers, there are no students either.
I agree.
Should we conclude that virtue can't be taught?
I think we should, if what we have discussed is accurate. I wonder, Socrates, if there are good men either, and if so, what is the way in which they come to be?
I think that we are poor examples, Meno. It seems the education you received from Gorgias is hardly adequate, nor is the one that Prodicus gave me. Therefore, let's turn attention to ourselves. Let's make it now a high priority to find someone who somehow makes us better. I say this after our investigation, for it's absurd that we have failed to see that men succeed not just because of knowledge. Perhaps this is the reason we don't know how good men come to be.
What do you mean?
I mean just this. I think that we were right when we agreed good men provide a good, and that this has to be. Is that not so?
It is.
And that they will provide a good, if they provide us guidance that's correct in our affairs. Is this correct as well?
I think so.
But when we concluded one, to guide correctly must have knowledge, we were likely incorrect.
How do you mean?
I'll tell you now. Suppose there is a man who knows the way to travel to Larissa, or anywhere you like. Suppose that he went there and guided others. It is clear that he would lead them well.
I think he would.
Suppose there were a man who had a right opinion of the way to travel there. Suppose, though, he himself had never gone that way, or even knew it. Would that man not also lead correctly?
Yes, that's true.
So if that man's opinion is correct, his guidance would be just as good as that of him who knows. The reason is he has a true opinion, though he lacks the knowledge.
That's true. His guidance would be just as good.
So true opinion is in no way worse than knowledge as a guide to human action. It's this that we omitted when we asked what kind of thing is virtue, and we said that only knowledge keeps us on the path of rightness. True opinion does as well.
That seems to be the case.
So true opinion is no less useful to us than is knowledge?
I think so, Socrates. And yet the man with knowledge never fails, whereas the man who follows his opinion will succeed sometimes and sometimes fail.
How do you mean? Will not the right opinion cause a man to have success so long as it is right?
That seems to be the case. So, Socrates, I wonder, if we are indeed correct, then why do men rate knowledge so more highly than right opinion? Are they not the same?
Do you know why you wonder this? If not, would you like me to tell you?
By all means, please do so, Socrates.
It is because you don't know of the statues that were made by Daedalus, but maybe there are none in Thessaly.
Please tell me what you mean in saying this.
The statues run away unless one ties them down, but if tied down, they stay in place.
So what?
If one acquires a work of Daedalus that's not tied down, it's worth but little, for no one can keep it. It's like a slave who's apt to run away. But any work of Daedalus that is tied down is worth a lot because his works are beautiful. What do I have in mind when saying this? I think of true opinions. For true opinions are, while they remain, a useful thing and all they do is good. But they are not disposed to do this. They escape the mind so that they're not worth much until one ties them down with an account of why they're true. And that, Meno, my friend, is recollection, as we said before. A true opinion, once it is tied down, becomes a kind of knowledge and it stays in place. This is why men consider knowledge to have more value than correct opinion. The two are not the same. The knowledge differs from the opinion, for it is tied down.
I see that, Socrates, by Zeus. It seems that what you said must be the difference.
I too lack knowledge, therefore I must guess. However, I don't think it is a guess to say that knowledge and that right opinion are different things. If there is anything I know, and that is not a claim I make of many things, then this is one of them.
You're right to say that, Socrates.
Well then, do we agree that having true opinion to guide one's actions is in no way worse than having knowledge?
This, I also think, is right.
Correct opinion isn't worse than knowledge, or less useful as a guide to action. One who follows true opinion is no less useful than the one with knowledge.
I think that is the case.
And we agreed good men provide a benefit.
We did.
And men are good and are beneficent, not just when they have knowledge, also when they have correct opinions. In this case, they are helpful to their cities. Furthermore, it's not the case that knowledge or opinion can come to men by nature, rather they're acquired. Or perhaps you disagree.
No, I agree.
Then since they do not come by nature, men must not be good by nature.
That's right.
So goodness does not come by nature. We also asked if goodness can be taught.
We did.
We said the answer would be yes, if it were knowledge.
That is what we said.
We also said that if it could be taught, it would be knowledge.
Yes, we said that too.
And if men teach it, then it can be taught. But if there are no teachers, then it can't.
That's right.
And we agreed there are no teachers.
We did.
So we concluded that it is not teachable and also isn't knowledge.
That follows, yes.
But surely we agree that virtue is a good.
Yes, that is true.
What guides correctly is both good and useful.
It is.
And true belief and knowledge are the only things that guide us in this way. A man who has them is a helpful guide. Some things succeed by chance. This is not due to human guidance. But where there is guidance, and guidance is correct, we must have one of two things, either true belief or knowledge.
I think that's right.
Since virtue can't be taught, it seems it isn't knowledge.
So it seems.
Therefore, we have excluded from the pair of good and useful things one of those things. We have determined knowledge cannot be the guide to action in public affairs.
That's what I think.
It follows it is not through being wise that men can lead their cities. Men like Themistocles and men like those that we discussed with Anytus before. This is why they cannot confer on others the qualities they have. It isn't knowledge that makes them what they are.
Yes, Socrates, that seems to be the case.
If it's not knowledge that guides the statesmen when they lead their cities in ways that are correct, then it must be correct belief. And in regard to knowledge, these statesmen are, it seems, no different from soothsayers and prophets. Just like them, these men feel inspiration and speak truth, but have no knowledge of the things they say.
That's likely.
Therefore, Meno, should we call these men divine who, lacking understanding, are nonetheless correct in what they say and do in many matters of importance?
I think we should.
It seems we would be right to say this of the soothsayers and prophets, the poets too. Therefore, we are correct to call out as divine the public men who likewise feel the influence the gods provide are also ones possessed by them. Their speeches are important and they cause success, although they know not what they say.
That's right.
And women call good men divine. The Spartans, too, will eulogize someone by saying of him, this man was divine.
And in this, Socrates, I think they're right, though Anytus perhaps will be annoyed with you for saying this.
I do not mind. We'll talk with him again. But if we were correct in the discussion that we had, then virtue is not something that a man is born with, nor is it a skill he's taught. Instead, the ones who have it have received a blessing from the gods, a kind of gift that's unaccompanied by understanding, unless there is a statesman who can make another man a statesman like himself. If so, then he would do among the living what Homer said about Tiresias when he was with the dead, that he alone among them kept his wits while all the rest were flitting back and forth as shadows do. In just this way, a man who had this knowledge would be, as far as virtue is concerned, the only true reality among the shadows.
That is well said, Socrates.
It follows, Meno, from what we have said, that virtue, when it shows up in a man, is there because he has received a gift the gods have given him. We shall obtain a clearer knowledge of these matters when, before investigating how it comes to men, we understand what virtue is according to itself. But now the time has come that I must go. You should convince your guest friend Anytus of just these things, of which you've been convinced yourself, so he is rendered more amenable to them. If you do this successfully, you will confer a benefit upon our city.